All right, 2015. Good to be back. Missed you guys. It's PRN.FM. Show's Insight. My name is Mark Farrell. Back from 2 week vacation. Great time of the year. Not a good day, though, in New York City, man. Whoa. Frozen tundra, the frozen apple. I don't know. Let me check out the temperature as we speak here. It is in New York City 15 degrees. Real feels like minus 10. So hopefully wherever you are, it's a hell of a lot warmer. Unbelievable. But hey, it's January. People complain whether it's cold or if it's really warm because, oh, global warming, what are we going to do? What are we going to do? Got a great show for you today. We're going to cover a lot of different topics. Going to be talking about a great jazz musician who was an acquaintance of mine who died on New Year's Day, Jeff Golub. Really, really sad, tragic story. I'll talk about him and talk about some of the highlights and his music contributions. Talk about the Cosby debacle, some other great topics. And you believe that the football program at the Sayreville High School in Sayreville, New Jersey, has been restored. So after all that fallout, they're going to have the program reinstated this coming fall. I'd like to have your opinions on that. Oh, you know what? I got an email this morning, actually the other week. I just remembered it this morning, that the last show we were talking about the movie Unbroken that was set to release, directed by Angelina Jolie, and I talked about how good the book was and how inspiring it was on many, many levels. And I got an email from a woman named Marissa from San Diego that says she found the movie spectacular, and she actually went out and bought the book and read the book voraciously. So I'm glad that she enjoyed it. And if you haven't gotten a chance to either read the book or see the movie, do so. I haven't seen the movie. On Christmas Day, my family, we all kind of met in Boston, one of my sister's houses. And about 15 of them went to the movies, but I had to stay home and watch those things called kids. But anyway, I'll get to see it, but I'm looking forward to it. But thanks for your email, Melissa. If you want to hear your send me anything, it's mark@markfarrellmotivation.com, M-A-R-K, at Mark Farrell, F as in Frank, A-R-R-E-L-L, motivation.com. So are you a New Year's resolver? Yeah, I know. It's the, eighth day of January. The statute of limitations should be expired about what are you going to do or not do in the new year. But the reason why I bring this up is because I teach spin, because I'm a nutbag, at 5:30 in the mornings twice a week. And spin is, you know, you go into the room and there's one wheel on the bike and you listen to really loud music and you get extremely, extremely fatigued and you leave so much of your DNA on the floor, you feel like you lost 10 pounds. Yeah, so that's what I teach because I'm a road cyclist and I like it. Even though I'm visually impaired, I have not had any crashes on my bike since I've been riding for 30 years. More. Yeah, I think so. Yeah. So it always gets me, I always get a kick out of this time of the year because, of course, we have New Year's resolvers. So the first 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and maybe even 4 weeks of the new year, the gym is just crowded of all these new faces. And I totally think it's great that people are making plans to become healthier, lose weight, get more tone, lean muscle mass, whatever the case may be. Whether it's for yourself or a loved one or to train for a race maybe that you've always wanted to do, a 5K, marathon, half marathon, whatever the case may be. But I'm saying to myself, I got an idea because this happens every year and everybody knows this, whether you belong to a gym or not. That I'm going to open up a gym, and for the first 2 to 3 weeks, it'll have equipment in it. And then after that, I'll turn it into a bar, and I'll call it Resolutions. I think that'll work, right? You get people in, sign them up for a membership. They can even say that they're going to go to a gym a month later, but it becomes a bar. I think it's pretty brilliant. But it's kind of interesting, the psyche behind having to flip the calendar for a new year to start something new. Whether it's behavior, maybe going back to school, reconnecting with somebody, stopping a bad habit. I have one New Year's resolution, and it's not a big deal. I've been wanting to do it for a while, and I didn't choose New Year's to do it because it's the new year. I just actually thought of it like 2 days before it. So I figured, oh, you know what? Let me just stop on New Year's Day or the 31st of December. Does December have 31 days? Shit, I don't know. I don't remember. Anyway, so my big New Year's resolution is to not have sweet and low. Is that a big one? Nah, not really. But if you drink as much unsweetened iced tea as me, it was kind of a big deal. But I'm still sweet and low free, man. I'm trying this new thing called, what is it, Truvia? From the natural plant leaf. I just forgot the name of it. But it's definitely healthier because it doesn't have the one ingredient that sweet and low has, which is escaping me right now. That's really not good for you. Apparently, it's supposed to be a carcinogen. So anyway, so that's my big New Year's Eve thing. But it makes me think about why people choose that time of the year to start something new. Whether it's because it's just been so ingrained in, you know, our thinking. And it's a new year, new start, new you, new life, new patterns, etc. And discard the old thoughts, behaviors, things of that nature. I don't know. So, like, if you're, like, a parent, should your New Year's resolution always be to vow to improve your parenting skills, love your kids more? Or if you're at work, do you devote yourself more to work and work longer hours? If you work for Gary Null at PRN.FM and there's no heat and hot water, do you say to yourself, I'm going to hold out and work 8 or 10 hours today? Oh, by the way, there's no heat or hot water today in the building. That's why we're going to be moving, guys. That's why we need your contributions, because we need to buy or rent a secure space in New York City for a better facility. So please, when you're listening to this, go over to the Donate Now icon on your screen and give us some money, because if we could turn the cameras around to see all the guys in the outside the studio area, Jason, Giselle, and Casey, they're all bundled up. They look like they're climbing Mount Everest. Looks like a monk fest out here. Everyone's got hoodies on and everything. So makes me think about, again, why people have resolutions. So I think it is probably just what we're conditioned to. But I'd like to hear some of your resolutions if they're, you know, out of the ordinary. If they're the ones where, you know, you're going to try to curse less, eat more healthy, et cetera, et cetera. Save those, because everybody's heard those 1,000 times. Phone number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. So I came up with a short list of resolutions I wish I could impose. All right. These I thought of about this morning because, you know, I don't have many resolutions myself except for the sweet and low. So here's the first one, okay? So every morning, especially when I'm going to the gym at 5 o'clock in the morning, I stop by Dunkin' Donuts. And there's always a few people in line, and no one's ordering big items like a hot coffee, one donut, a bagel, and they're out the door, you would think. But the staff where I go to, the employees, they're nice. I really like them. You know, I tip them, nice to them, greet them, BS with them. But they are so incredibly so that my resolution I wish I could impose on them is that they get to work earlier so they can imbibe in a cup or two of coffee of their own so they can move their ass so they don't have to spend 15 minutes in the morning waiting for a cup of tea. So that's number one. Number two is Mayor de Blasio realizes he can't cut the mustard for the remainder of his term and steps down. Well, I haven't figured out the rest about, you know, who would step in. Maybe there's a deputy mayor. I don't know, but we'd have to find out who that person is. But again, these are not really realistic. They're just on the wink, wink humor side. Another resolution I wish I could impose, that concert tickets wouldn't require taking out a second mortgage in order to go to a show. How many people feel that way? Raise your hand. Yeah, a shitload, right? I mean, U2 tickets coming around in the early summer, just preposterous. So if you want to go to a show to an A-caliber act, I'd say in the metropolitan, any metropolitan area, you're spending at least $100 to $130 a ticket. So you figure two tickets, dinner, some drinks, it's at least a $400, maybe even a $500 a night if you want to, you know, do it the nice way. So the ticket prices have really gotten out of control. They're exorbitant, man. It's extortion. God. Whew. Not enough bonuses, holiday bonuses to cover the concert tickets. All right. So Chris Christie, again, these are the resolutions I wish I could impose. Chris Christie has an epiphany and realizes not only is it wrong not to publicly support his local football teams, but it's unfathomable to be a Cowboys fan, and fraternize with the owner and be proud of it. Really, Chris Christie. And then talk major smack about it. He's got a major set, doesn't he? Wow. Yeah, I think so. Okay, here's one that's, I didn't really flesh this out too well, but you'll get the gist of it. All the women on the reality show brand, you know, the Real Housewives of fill in a blank, whatever city, simultaneously experience plastic surgery meltdown, and viewers are so disgusted that they see this on live TV, they no longer watch these shows, and they get pulled from the networks because they are not scripted reality shows. They are scripted, I'm sorry, reality shows. So, yeah, one more thing I wish I could impose resolution-wise. And, hey, world, do everyone a favor. Go easy on the selfies. Listen, we know, we get it. You're absolutely wonderful. You're beautiful. You're creative. You're unique. You're even funny. So funny that you even look funny in those selfies. But please, 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 this is a big one too. No more pictures on Facebook, LinkedIn, wherever, of the food you're about to consume. Do you think anyone cares? I mean, it looks really good. So if it looks even really good, we're just even more pissed off that we or individuals can't cook something so scrumptious. Or even worse, taking a picture of the foam that you just threw down, that you just consumed. I just don't get it. Do you get it? Maybe I'm missing something. I don't know. Maybe I feel like these people who do this, and so many people do it on Facebook. I only use Facebook basically for work purposes. Mark Farrow Motivation on Facebook. So it's professional. Once in a great while, I'll do something lightly personal. But I use it as a conduit for work. And work for me is my life. What I do when I'm not here, speak to different organizations, schools, high schools, about a lot of different vital topics. That's markfarrowmotivation.com. So the other thing I would like to impose resolution-wise, I wish I could impose, would be eliminate turning clocks back an hour in the fall and embrace daylight savings time all year round. Right? I mean, I think this started, I think, in 1915, something like that. I could be wrong, but I think I may be right, actually. Note this point in history. Mark Farrell's right about something. That, I mean, especially this time of year, it's so damn depressing. Dark at, what, 4:05, 4:10? Really bad, especially in January and February. March isn't so bad, but the doldrums of the winter make it so, so bad. And you're really not saving any energy because you're actually consuming, I think, more because lights are coming on an hour earlier. Everything has to be illuminated. And this is something that happens to me quite often. I don't know why, but when I talk to people who commute a lot, they're like, I can't believe this happens to you all the time. But I wish I could impose a resolution that would allow uneventful mass transit experiences. So I would say once every six-ish weeks-ish or so that I'm either on the bus or subway and there's an altercation, usually verbal and then sometimes physical. And for some reason, Mark Farrell is wired to stupidly intervene. Yeah, I don't know why I do this. I've been doing this for years. It's just, it's innate. I just react. There's one time, actually, this is kind of an interesting story. Let me see what the year was. Probably 1993, 94. I'm walking down the street on First Avenue in New York, probably in Upper West East Side in the 80s, lower 80s. And I think I just came from a bar, maybe had a couple beers. And all I saw was a door open to from a store. Some guy comes fleeing out, running full speed, and then a woman screaming, and I could see a purse or something in his hand. So I immediately just, like, jump into, like, I don't know, NYPD mode? I don't know. Lunatic mode? I can save the world? Dudley Do-Right mode? Shit, I don't know. Anyway, so here I am. I start sprinting after this guy. Don't even think twice. I'm sprinting down a street. I catch up to him. Actually, when I'm like a foot behind him, when I'm just reaching out to grab his collar, I'm thinking, what am I going to do when I catch this guy? So I grab and I slam against this, you know how storefronts have the metal gates? I slam against that. And I guess this guy probably thinks I'm an off-duty cop, which you think I was because of the role I assumed. So I throw him against there, and I'm just saying, yelling at the guy, stay, 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 whatever. So then a woman who was yelling at him to stop and who was obviously, you know, victimized in my eyes, starts saying to me, let him go, he didn't do anything. So I realized, oh, they're working together. So it was a nail salon, someone stole a purse, and she acted like it was her purse or something of that nature. I didn't find out all the specifics. But then I realized, oh, I better let this guy go. She's working with him. They're together. This is what they do. They're MO. They go into a bar, a restaurant, a store such as a nail salon, and rip people off, and she acts like she's a victim, and everyone gets fooled. So so that's the story of one of the reasons and how I get involved. A couple weeks ago, right before Christmas, I was on a bus. 10 minutes into my ride into New York, this couple starts yelling at, male and female, starts yelling at the couple behind him. Two ladies, well-dressed ladies. Long story short, it was over how far back the seat was. So this boils up to the point where the guy stands up and I think he's just about to hit, physically hit with his hand, his fist, one of the women behind him. So I immediately just lurch up and say, hey, buddy, buddy, okay, everybody's right here. Everybody's right. Just have a seat. Take a seat. Sit down. Because you know why? First of all, I don't want anybody hurt. Secondly, it's going to totally, totally screw up my commute and the other 49, 52 people or so on the bus. Because when you're on the bus, the cops are going to have to come. Statements are going to have to come. They're going to have to get your ID. It's going to be an hour later, and I'm going to be an hour late for my job, my gig, whatever, a meeting. So I had no problems. In my mind, I'm like, if this guy gives me any flack, and I'm not a violent dude at all, but I stand up for my rights and for other people's rights. So if this guy even comes close to pulling back his arm, I'm just going to lift this guy up, drag him down the aisle, throw him out the bus and tell the bus driver, go. So the bus driver stood up at that point when I said to her, you know, it kind of took over. And she looked at me. I said to the bus driver, call the cops. Call the cops now. Tell them you want him here right now. And I looked at everybody on the bus and said, does everyone concur? Because you know what's going to happen. They're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. No, no, no. Call the cops. Call the cops. So that's what happened. The cops came and they took him off the bus. And so like 25 minutes later, we get on our way. But that happens to me a lot. I don't know what it is. It's crazy. So I won't even call it resolutions, New Year's resolutions. One of my resolutions, since I'm a father, husband, should be not to intervene in any situation that could possibly deem dangerous. You know? Ah, man. So New Year's Day is not always a good day for me historically since 1992 because as many avid Insight listeners know, my brother took his life on February 20th, 1992. So, but New Year's Day was the first day that before the February date where he took his life is when I realized he was really, really in turmoil because I was totally hungover and I don't know what time. Maybe I woke up at 12, 1 o'clock. Now I'm 25 years of age now, a few years ago. So I'm totally hungover. I wake up. We're living in the same apartment up on the Upper East Side. And I come out and either I'm on a couch or he's on a couch. I forget. And I just realize how upset he is. He's just totally, totally sad. And I never saw my brother like this. I mean, he was a strong guy, a lawyer, successful, confident. And he was just totally like coming apart. And so I gave him a hug and I was like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. So again, this was New Year's Day. So I called my mom and said, hey, listen, you know, we had known that he was unhappy at that point. But that was the beginning where we realized it kind of got raised to a different level. So he expressed that he had bad thoughts, suicidal thoughts, etc. And I kind of comforted him and consoled him as much as I could. Again, spoke to different family members. And later that day, a good friend of mine came over. We went out to get a movie, rent a movie, and come back. And I remember crossing 86th Street. I don't know whether it was in between lights when we got the movie, my friend and my brother. And I always kind of run for it when the light's changing. So here I am. I'm running to go across the light because, you know, it's going to change. And in my mind, I'm going like, holy shit, what am I doing? My brother just told me he had suicidal thoughts and I'm running across 86th Street. What am I, nuts? So anyway, so that's why New Year's Day is kind of very ambivalent for me. But then it went even much further south than that on New Year's Day, this particular New Year's Day, a few days ago, because I learned of the passing of Jeff Golub. Jeff Golub was a fantastic musician. He used to play in the rock genre for years for a lot of icons we'll talk about. And then he broke out on his own and became a smooth jazz guitarist. And in smooth jazz world, I think he is deemed either on par with Larry Carlton or even surpassing Larry Carlton. I mean, he's definitely one of the best guitarists in the jazz arena. And I would definitely probably put him up there in the top 30 from what I've read in rock guitarist. That's a pretty good number to be in. So the reason why I know Jeff Golub is because I worked for a radio station in New York here when it was the smooth jazz format. It was how many years? About 15 years. And so he would come by the radio station because he lived right here in Manhattan, actually not too far from where we're broadcasting right now on the Upper West Side in New York. And he would come by and hang out because he was such a cool dude. He was one of these people. You ever meet somebody and instantly you're like, wow, I really like them. I mean, within the first few minutes, you can really tell if you just connect with somebody. And this dude, he was just very successful, completely humble. Humble as the day is long. But I knew he was just a great guy. You just got that vibe. He was totally a cool cat, long hair, good-looking guy, dressed really hip, and, you know, just totally mellow, too. And be like, yeah, Mark, you know. So back then, I had two positions when I was working for the Smooth Jazz Station. I was a talk show host and also creative services director, which means I make a lot of things that air on the radio, like concert commercials, things that speak about what the station is, what they do, the sizzle of the station. So he would come in my studio and I would play him things that I made, like concert spots for him. So he would hang out. And one particular day, he brought in a new CD that he had been working on. And this was either, again, it's a while ago. So this was either the first track that came off of it or the actual finalized CD. I don't remember, but he was so proud of it. And right now we're going to hear, this is a cut called Drop Top. And this is Jeff Golub. And so here I was in my studio, sitting back in the chair in front of like these $5,000 pair of speakers next to Jeff Golub, listening to his new tune that he brought in for me, Drop Top on PRN. Jeff Gaub, Drop Top. And the reason why I chose that song for you to play, to hear, is because when he was in the studio and he played me that song, first of all, I was blown away at the production value of that song. Particular version you heard right there was live in London, I think from 2009 or 2011. And so he told me the reason why he wrote this song and why he called it Drop Top, because he bought a convertible and he loved to drive around. Check out how cool this is. I always thought about it. This would be a cool thing to do. Drive around Manhattan with the top down. I mean, with all the skyscrapers. And he has two kids as well, which is even more sad, and a wife. So, you know, going back to why I was just kind of crushed by this, because I always had a very good connection with the guy. And going back to, you know, when you just know that someone's a really good person, we never went out to lunch, dinner. He never came over to my house, vice versa. But every time he came by the station, he would hang out in my studio. And we had a really, really nice rapport. And also, all the time I spent listening to his music, making concert commercials, etc., you know, made me realize what a great musician he was. Now, he played with Billy Squire for years. As a matter of fact, if you Google him, last name is Golub, G-O-L-U-B, G-O-L-U-B, first name Jeff, you'll see all these videos. It's really funny. I mean, he's been playing for 30, 40 years. With some really, really major names. But he toured the longest with Billy Squire. Billy was lead guitarist, and then I think they would switch back and forth. But he does some incredible solos, Jeff Golub. But it's funny because you see him with such a young-looking face. I mean, he was very young-looking at the age of 59. He died on New Year's Day. But, I mean, still, back in the 80s, you know, everyone looked different. So here he is on the stage of Madison Square Garden or somewhere equally as large or even larger, jamming out to Billy Squire, Lonely as the Night. And I remember him telling me a story about playing with Rod Stewart. He really, you know, enjoyed playing with Rod Stewart, toured for years. As a matter of fact, he started producing his solo work. His first solo album came out when he was performing with Rod Stewart. So his Rod Stewart audition consists of this. Rod Stewart says, "Hey, Jeff, do me a favor. Play Maggie May." Everyone knows Rod Stewart's song, Maggie May. It's one of his staple songs. He said to me, Jeff said to me, "Mark, I got not even halfway through the song." He said, Jeff, stop, stop, cut, cut, cut. "That's great, man. You're hired. Now let's go to the pub." How cool is that? Because obviously, you know, Rod knew the cat was really good. I mean, his reputation preceded him. He was a major desired session player. He played with jazz greats. I mean, jazz was one of the backbones of his music passion. He grew up listening to jazz cats and played with many, many greats. I mean, if you can play jazz guitar, you can, you know, forget rock and roll. You can knock it out of the park. So he tells me all these different stories that I just thought were so cool. And again, it's not a bragging thing. I would just kind of like pull them out of them. I'm like, "So who else did you play with? How were they? And how cool were this person? And who was hard to work with?" So now that's back in the 2007, 2008-ish. So and this is where the road starts to turn for Jeff Golub, that he lost his vision. His optic nerve detached. And that's connected to your brain. And when that detaches, you don't see. So he lost his sight. And did he stop playing? Of course not, because when you're that good, you don't need your vision. So he wrote in many different articles and posted about how he's become a much better musician because, you know, your ears are much more attuned. Musicians' ears in general are so much more a sense of hearing frequencies and notes and melodies are so much more finely tuned. I mean, I'm visually impaired, and my hearing is incredible. Even after all these years of being in radio, being in a soundproof room, mixing, you know, audio for hours and hours, sometimes 12, 14-hour days, and it's still good because it's been so good that even the damage that I did to it is still well above the average person. So he lost his vision, and he said how he became a better musician. You know, had to take some time off. to learn his way, to be acquainted, I guess, with all the different aids and technological devices. Then he went back on the road and started gigging again. And then something very unfortunate happened. He was on a New York City subway platform, fell off the platform. A train rode over him, and he survived. Jeff Golub survived having a subway car ride on top of him. So Jeff wrote later that the guy in EMS said to him, "Man, it's not your time. You got a lot more work to do." Yeah, no shit. A subway car rides over you. Unbelievable. God. And so what happens next? He battles, and I never heard of this disorder, progressive supranuclear palsy, known as PSP, since 2011. Basically, sounds like it shuts down your brain. Tragic way to go. I think of ALS, but ALS is the opposite. ALS is your body and your brain is intact, I believe. So, really, really sad. There were Facebook pictures for the last 6, 8 months, 10 months of a lot of his musician friends who would come and spend time with him, his family, 2 sons, and his wife, Audrey. And so that's how my New Year's Day went. I hardly knew the guy, if you think about it. I mean, in all total time, I spent, you know, a couple hours together with him. But, I felt that real good connection, a real good bond, and I just felt horrible for the guy. So when I heard of all this, because actually all this made news, it was in the Daily News, a lot of the newspapers, especially when he fell in front of the subway, lost his vision, I reached out to him. I waited some time, I connected with him on Facebook, and sent him some emails saying, "Hey, Jeff, you know, my name's Mark, you may remember me, blah, 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 you sang at my studio, I don't know if you ever knew this, because it's not entirely obvious, but I have a visual disability," went on to explain that. "If you're ever interested, love to get together, catch up, and see what you how you are, see if there's anything I can do for you. I have a lot of connections into great physicians here in New York City and also down in Maryland at the National Institutes for Health that, who knows, that could possibly give you some assistance." So I forget how much time went by, but he wrote back, "Mark, of course I remember you. Man, we had some great times hanging out in your studio." So, but we never got together. He said he was on tour. His schedule was very hectic. He said to me in the email, if I didn't hear back from him in like a month's time, to reach out to him again. And I don't remember if I did. I have to check that string of emails. But that's the story of Jeff Golub, my friends. But that's not the end of it, because his music obviously will always live on. He's totally loved and adored. And today I'm actually going to a memorial service a couple blocks away from here that I imagine is going to be heavily, heavily attended by a lot of musician greats. And there's also a benefit concert happening on January 21st at B.B. King's right here in New York City. It's called a Friends of Jeff Golub All-Star Memorial Benefit Concert. There's going to be a lot of great performances. It's going to be who's who. So far, they've locked down Rick Braun, Dave Koz, Richard Elliott, Mindy Ebert, Kirk Whalum. Kirk Whalum, actually, I think, is officiating, is that right? Sounds like a basketball game. Yeah, I think officiating today's memorial service. Chuck Loeb, Christopher Cross, Philippe Sace, Randy Brecker, another phenomenal guitarist, Henry Butler, Mark Egan, Bill Evans, Steve Ferrone, and many, many more artists to be announced. Interested in tickets, log on to marqueeconcerts.com, marqueeconcerts.com. If you don't live in the area, if you live out of the country and you like to contribute to his, you know, musicians don't have insurance, or typically have not the best kind of insurance. So they're asking for donations, and I'm not sure whether it's going to the family or to possibly the organization of the PSP that the Progressive Supranuclear Palsy organization. But you can go on jeffgolub.com for donation information and or just read about the guy. He's pretty fascinating. and see his videos. Again, it's Jeff, GOLUB.com. But before we go and finish talking about Jeff, I want you to hear a piece of this cut. This is actually one of Rod Stewart's songs that, you know, I was just talking about, Maggie May. Actually, no, I'm sorry. This is a guitar solo in the middle of, I just forgot the name of the song. But here it is, live on PRN. Go Jeff. Phenomenal guitar solo. And the reason why I don't remember the name of the song, because the guitar solo doesn't sound anything like that's a bridge in a song, like the actual song name. So pardon me for forgetting that. But that's just a little taste of him just kind of freestyling in the middle of a Rod Stewart cut. The guy was very, very gifted. And I was very, very happy to have the pleasure of meeting someone of that caliber as just being a good person on this planet Earth. Insight continues on PRN.FM next. Welcome back to Insight on PRN.FM, the Progressive Radio Network. My name is Mark Farrell. 16 degrees. No, 18 degrees. Whoa, take off those sweaters. Balmy day out there. 18 degrees on the streets in New York City and 34 degrees in the studios of the PRN Network. If you just tuned in, we don't have any heat or hot water. But, you know, those things are overrated, those staple items. But Gary's such a good guy. He called up and said, hey, we can shut the network down and go home. I'm just kidding. The talk has to continue. But if you have any portable heaters that run on kerosene, bring them on over. Bring them on over. We'll take them. So good news, man. If you want a free education to our American fans and our international listeners, all German universities are now free to Americans and all other international students. How cool is this? So I imagine a lot of kids are going to be start taking German because it would behoove them. Because I think the average debt, college debt now is like 29K. It's just below 30. I think it's 29.5, the average. $29,500. You imagine graduating. Congratulations, Joe Blow and Mary Smith. You can go out into the world and, you know, carpe diem and all that jazz. And here's your bill of $29,500. Whoa. So Germany made this move because they called it tuition fees unjust and added they discourage young people who do not have a traditional academic family background from taking up study. Of course, that makes sense. It's a core task of politics, they say, to ensure that young women and men can study with a high-quality standard free charge in Germany. So there's even more perks. Even before Germany abolished the tuition, college tuition for all students, the price was a steal. I mean, it was only like $630 a semester. Wow. Also, German students would receive many more perks, including discounts for food, clothing, events, all that jazz. You know, that's crazy. So let's take a lesson out of the playbook here, universities and colleges in the United States. I mean, we all read about this. For our local listeners, Rutgers, New Jersey, Rutgers College of New Jersey. Oh, they're incredible high salaries. I think the president makes $1 million or over $1 million for a state school and institution. The football coaches were making exorbitant money. I mean, and this is why it trickles down. So the tuition is just astronomical. So start taking German classes, guys, because it's going to pay off for sure. So, you know, I mentioned this at the head of the show, the Saraville debacle that happened in the fall where the high school football team, a few members, were sexually assaulting freshman players. And it really got out of control, really came unglued. And the fallout is the athletic director was fired. The head coach still has his job. I don't know how this can be. I hope he does not continue to have his position. But he's still on the faculty. So the schedule, the season is supposed to resume in the fall of this year, 2015, at War Memorial High School, Sayreville, New Jersey. So I want to know how you feel about that. Just to refresh your memory, that it's actually very, very unthinkable to even talk about this again. But, hey, this is what took place. A lot of seniors would hold down freshmen. And other seniors would accompany the seniors that are going to be the perpetrators and sexually assault them by inserting fingers into their rectum. Yeah, you believe I just spewed those words? Unbelievable. So that's what happened on several occasions. And so the coaches said they had no idea of this. Actually, the assistant coach was suspended 2 weeks prior to all this coming out into the news frenzy because he was arrested for steroids. Yeah. Let's hear for War Memorial High School. So now, I don't know. So just again, to refresh your memory that they, I think they played a game or two and then they canceled the rest of the season this past fall. So do you think that this year, 2015, there should be a football schedule? Should there be a team? I'm not sure how I feel about it. Usually I'm pretty black and white, maybe a little gray sometimes on topics, subjects, making decisions. But on this, I'm just, and my gut says to me no. And the reason why I say no, and I understand, I get the whole thing where why should everyone suffer for a few bad apples? But, I mean, this is a town that eats, lives, and breathes, and bleeds football. And so many of these people were so totally pissed and morally confused why they would cancel the rest of the season. So I don't know if parents even learned anything. Did the administrators learn anything? The superintendent was brand new. I think he was on a job for like maybe 6 months or so. But the question is, what will be instituted that this won't happen again? I think that's maybe the reason why I'm not having an easy time deciding whether it should be a season again. Because is there a new policy in place? Are the locker rooms going to be redesigned? Who knows? I'm just coming up with ideas. Why should the same coach have the oversight again if he had no knowledge, or if he did have knowledge, didn't act on protecting the rights of each and every student / player of his? That happened on his watch. So now I actually just decided that I feel that it should not resume because I have not read about anything that would protect these kids. And I believe you. I understand. Things can happen. You can't watch everybody all the time. You just can't. But at least come out with a blanket policy. Classes for administrators, safety programs, open door policy for kids to come in to communicate that, you know, sexual assaults or innuendos, hazing, abuse, verbal or physical is happening, something of that nature. 888-874-4888. Let me know your input. So I got a call the other day, actually on Monday, to speak at a conference that's happening in Atlantic City. And I'm really, really happy about this because it's about 1,000 attendees. And they actually put it up to me in terms of what I want to cover. So the main hot topics that I cover are overcoming adversity, stemming from my visual disability, and all the things that I couldn't do, and how I became resilient, and my perseverance, etc. And that's a great program. But I do a lot of other ones, anti-bullying, anti-teasing, drugs and alcohol, mental health, you know, being resilient, self-entitlement. So I found that immediately I'm like, oh, this is great. This is great. This is great. And then I realized, oh, geez, I had to narrow it down to one because they only want me to focus on one topic, even though overcoming adversity is kind of an umbrella for many of those topics, which I'm going to lead into next because a friend of mine just contacted me and he is pretty much hit rock bottom with alcohol. But staying on topic right now, I decide this is a great problem to have, and I'm very, very fortunate. And I just love so much what I do here on PRN.FM with the show Insight and talking to you guys and having great dialogue and covering a lot of compelling topics. But also to be in front of people and to have the opportunity to share my personal stories of how I either screwed up in life. Totally not so much where I kind of got really, really injured and or ended up in rehab, but very, very close. And or all the events that happened to me, like my brother taking his life, etc. And things out of my control of having a visual disability, etc. So all these different things are really, really compelling. And I say compelling and not the way like exciting, but it's ways for me to impact people's life. And I find that to be one of the most rewarding things that I can do on this place we call Earth. All right, that sounds like a little too out there, doesn't it? All right, so I'm moving on. So I got a call, unfortunately, the other day from a friend of mine. We used to be really tight, fell kind of apart over the years, not because of anything in particular, just because life happens. You get busy, relationships, etc. But his relationship always has been and always and is still currently with alcohol. And this is a dear, sweet guy, funny as hell. I would do anything for him in the world. And I knew this day was going to come. I didn't know when, but I knew it was going to happen. So he said to me, Mark, you know, I need help. And, you know, we went through, you know, where he was up to, where he was at, his consumption, his health. Was he depressed? So I just kind of did like a check with him. I'm not a doctor. I just had been down this road before. My father was an alcoholic. Other alcoholics in the family. I certainly have been knocking on the AA door for many, many years in terms of being on the precipice of being an alcoholic. It's in check for me, but I've been down that road, man. At age 35, I made a conscious decision to not wake up at 40 and be an alcoholic and be single. So I kind of started curtailing my drinking back then. So what am I going to do to help out my buddy? So I immediately went to meet him. And, you know, he looked completely like shit, washed out. But he's ready. So he's in a program right now, and he's getting help, and that's great. So the bad part is he had to hit rock bottom, but the good news is he hit rock bottom, and he's ready to pull himself out, which is very, very cool. So it makes me think about, you know, how a lot of us hit rock bottom in a lot of different ways, especially come January, you know, the January winter blues, and what you can do to kind of keep these at bay. First and foremost, you kind of really want to avoid alcohol, you know, because as much as alcohol can make you feel great, it does have the reverse effect sometimes, you know, so you definitely want to avoid that. Moderation, of course, everything in moderation is great. Exercise. We talked about this at the head of the program, how people, you know, gym memberships kind of skyrocket in January and then they kind of dwindle off because people get lazy and they get back in their old ways and it's too damn cold to go to the gym. I'm lazy and American Idol's on tonight, so I don't want to go work out. Anything like that. How about taking a class? You know, you basically want to get yourself out of that mundane rut that you're in. Maybe try to reconnect with some old friends. How about a new hobby? It's definitely something that you've always wanted to do that's piqued your interest. But for some reason, whether it's an expense, a time, maybe you're intimidated because you don't think you have the skill set. But the hell with all that. Make it work. Make it happen. You can do it. Maybe travel if you have the funds. Maybe if you didn't have to buy too much crap for everybody over the holidays, that you can afford to travel. It doesn't have to be, you know, if he can travel very far and to a new destination, that would be great. But if not, maybe a weekend trip, 2-day trip, whatever, just to break yourself out of the mold. But, you know, again, don't try to, you know, pacify yourself with food or alcohol because you're going to just, unfortunately, there are evidence-based studies that say when you're stressed and or depressed, sometimes food can make you feel better for the short term. So then you're going to even get more upset at yourself because of you're going to have guilt. And number two, you're going to possibly feel less attractive because maybe you're going to be more out of shape and pack on a few more pounds. It's natural. It happens. And you can take it off. You know, it's just making a decision to make a change in your life, which we all can do. Speaking of that, you have any sweet and low for me? So I mentioned earlier in the show that my New Year's resolution was to give up sweet and low. Doesn't sound like a big deal at all, and it really isn't. But unfortunately, I don't usually ingest sugar, but sweet and low is not really a sugar. It's just this like manufactured crap that makes things really, really sweet. So I don't like unsweetened iced tea without it. So I started using this other supplement that's natural. Truvia, I think it's called. Sounds like trivia to me, but it's Truvia from some plant extract. It's supposed to be natural. Who the hell knows? All I know is, listen, we're going to have a great year. Gary Noel's got a lot of fantastic things planned this year. So is the program director, Jason. And we're going to have a great time here on the Progressive Network. Always love to hear from you guys. Email is mark@markfarrellmotivation.com. Mark, M-A-R-K, and Mark Farrell, F-A-R-R-E-L-L, motivation.com. Love to speak at your organization, your high school. I speak at schools K-12, college, corporate, nonprofit, and more about a lot of different topics on my website. And the website is markfarrellmotivation.com. Thanks so much, guys, for listening this week. No matter where you are, if you're listening in the States, chances are it's very cold because we have a major, major cold front that's just swiping across the United States. Have a great day. Stay warm. Can't wait to talk to you next Thursday. Cheers. Bye-bye.